Assessing Revolutionary and Insurgent Strategies. Undergrounds in Insurgent, Revolutionary, and Resistance Warfare, 2nd Edition, 25 January 2013. Paul J. Tompkins, Jr., USASOC Project Lead, Robert Leonard, Editor. United States Army Special Operations Command and the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. Letter of Introduction. The first time I saw the original version of the Human Factors Considerations of Undergrounds in Insurgencies was when it was presented to me in 1979 at the Special Forces Qualification Course, and I have reread it multiple times in the years since. A couple of years after I first read Human Factors, I discovered in the preface a mention of a predecessor work titled Undergrounds in Insurgent, Revolutionary, and Resistance Warfare. I sought out the book, and it, along with Human Factors, became core references for my career in Special Forces. The original edition of this book, and the remainder of the series produced by the Special Operations Research Office, SORO, constitutes some of the foundational references necessary to a full understanding of Special Forces operations and doctrine. 33 years later, I still use it routinely to teach and mentor new and experienced Special Forces personnel. This book is intended as an update to the original text. Basic human nature does not change, and much has remained the same throughout the history of human political conflict. The new edition, therefore, includes the enduring principles and methods from the original. The sections of the book discussing techniques, causes, and methods, however, required updating to reflect the many changes in the world and experiences of Special Forces in the last 50 years. While the need to resist perceived oppression has not changed, the ways in which oppressed societies express this need through culture have changed significantly. Whereas insurgencies prior to the publication of the first edition of this book in 1963 were predominantly communist-inspired, modern rebellions have been inspired by a greater number of factors. This increase in the causes of insurgency began with the fall of the Soviet Union and accelerated with the attacks of September 11, 2001 on the United States. In addition, technology has changed the world significantly over the last 50 years. Modern communications, the internet, global positioning and navigation systems, and transportation have all introduced different dynamic pressures on how insurgencies develop and operate. As a result of the cultural and technological shifts of the past 50 years, we decided that the original series by SORO needed revision and updating. Like the original series, this update is written by sociologists, this time from the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. Plenty of histories and military analyses have been written on the different revolutions that have taken place over the past 50 years, but this series, including the new second volume of the casebook, hopefully provides a useful perspective. Since rebellion is a socio-political issue that takes place in the human domain, a view through the non-military lens broadens the aperture of learning for Special Forces soldiers. This project would not have been possible without the support of Colonel Dave Maxwell, who was the USASOC G3 and fought to get the project approved. Also, I must thank Michael McCran, a longtime friend who encouraged me to continue to seek the approval of this project. Paul J. Tompkins, Jr., USASOC Project Lead. Preface. Since the original publication of Undergrounds in Insurgent, Revolutionary, and Resistance Warfare in 1963, much has changed and much remains relevant. The internet, the globalization of media, the demise of Soviet communism and the Cold War, and the rise of Islamic fundamentalism have all impacted the nature and functionality of undergrounds. The original study's observation, however, that for every guerrilla fighter there are from 2 to 27 underground members is still true. Likewise, the report's main thesis, that the underground part of an insurgency is the sine qua non of all such movements, is demonstrably accurate today. As defined in the 1963 work, undergrounds are, quote, the clandestine elements of indigenous politico-military revolutionary organizations which attempt to illegally weaken, modify, or replace the government authority, typically through the use or threat of force. unquote. Because the art and practice of insurgency has evolved since then, almost every part of this definition deserves examination. During the Cold War, bipolarity characterized both the world and the nature of insurgencies. Undergrounds functioned in the illegal realm, while the government's actions were legal. Today, the lines of demarcation are blurred. Many insurgencies operate simultaneously in the legal, illegal, and quasi-legal domains, and governments sometimes engage in illegal activity to oppose them. Likewise, it is hard to find the boundary between clandestine and overt operations because modern insurgencies simultaneously conduct both. Part of the reason for this blurring is a change in the paradigm of how insurgencies succeed or fail. The classic and simplistic way of thinking about it is to imagine an insurgency gaining strength and momentum over a long campaign and finally seizing control of the government in the mold of the Maoist takeover of China. Today, it is more likely that the successful insurgency will gain some level of legitimate, open political acknowledgement while simultaneously continuing in quasi-legal and illegal activity. Power-sharing arrangements are more common today than revolutionaries overthrowing the government. A modern insurgency thus can be thought of as including four components instead of just the three described in the original work: the underground, the guerrilla component, the auxiliary, and the public component. At the start of an insurgency, the underground might be the only active sphere. As time goes on, auxiliary and guerrilla contingents begin to grow and operate. Eventually, pursuant to a political agreement, the insurgency can begin to operate in the public political process. If successful there, the entire movement might at some point become public. For example, when they become the sole legitimate government or are otherwise fully integrated into the political process. Alternately, failure to achieve their goals in the political process might cause the movement to revert to clandestine, illegal, and violent operations. Thus, the four components, the underground, the guerrilla component, the auxiliary, and the public component, exist in a dynamic and constantly changing relationship with each other. Hence, this study will look at the public component as a requisite part of modern insurgencies, separate from but closely integrated with the underground. The public component is different from the underground in that it is not clandestine and most often a legal entity. At the same time, it overlaps with the underground in that the latter's functionality includes the management of propaganda and communications in general. Likewise, our understanding of modern insurgencies requires further elucidation concerning the nature of the guerrilla component. The dictionary definition of the word links it to irregular warfare, and for most of modern history since the 19th century, this linkage is accurate. Because the Maoist model of insurgency features an extended phase of clandestine operations aimed at garnering strength, guerrilla activities conformed to the irregular label easily. In other words, insurgent soldiers employed unconventional tactics and organization against government forces. Since the end of World War II, however, the definition of the guerrilla component has migrated. Modern insurgencies continue to prosecute irregular warfare, but some also seek to build conventional capability. This phenomenon was apparent in the struggles of the Viet Cong during the French and American occupations of Vietnam and is likewise a part of Hezbollah's strategy in Lebanon today. Hence, this study will use both armed component and guerrilla component, depending on the context, to indicate that modern insurgencies often use both regular and irregular organization and tactics. The original study offered a germane and well-considered discussion of the definition of undergrounds. It concluded that criminal organizations, although by definition clandestine and illegal, fell nevertheless outside the definition of undergrounds for their lack of a political military organization and an objective of opposing the government. As with other aspects of the definition, this conclusion has lost strength. Indeed, Modern insurgencies now almost universally include both criminal activity and some form of alliance or cooperation with criminal networks. The line between the strictly ideological insurgent and the strictly criminal drug lord has blurred. Pablo Escobar, the notorious Colombian drug lord killed in 1993, evolved from a criminal gang leader into a quasi-political figure who dabbled in social activism, for example, and the FARC in Colombia found itself inextricably associated with the criminal drug trade. Finally, the original study of undergrounds discussed the most relevant functions, but the present study includes a look at the function of leadership specifically. The leaders of insurgent, resistance, and revolutionary movements often create or emerge from the underground. Underground leaders provide strategic and tactical direction, organization, and the ideology of the movement. They perform these functions within the unique and compelling context of their country, culture, and political economy. How they manage the often conflicting trends that defend the framework of their insurgent movements, in large measure, determines ultimate success and failure. The purpose of this book is to educate the student and practitioner of insurgency and counterinsurgency. Just as a doctor must study the anatomy of the human body in order to advance in the profession of medicine, so the insurgent or counterinsurgent must understand the anatomy of the insurgent movement. The doctor does not confine himself to treating visible symptoms, but instead looks for causality within the body. In a similar manner, counterinsurgency does not aim solely at the guerrilla component of the enemy, but must also operate against the underground that sustains the more visible aspects of the insurgency. This book examines the anatomy of undergrounds in various insurgencies of recent history. Our goal is to continue the groundbreaking work performed in the original study and update it with insights from the post-Cold War world. Primary source material for this book comes from the Tier 1 and Tier 2 case studies written as part of the Assessing Revolutionary and Insurgent Strategies project. Hence, these case studies should be used as companion documents for this study.